Sheena Stura's early piano piece, Malambo, from 1940, with pianist Barbara Nisman. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Fantasia. We go out with reference to Prokofiev's Flute Sonata.
You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM, Madison.
Hello, I'm Moira Alderson with the BBC News. Germany's defence minister has said that Russia's continued aggression against Ukraine means that peace appears to be out of reach for now. Boris Pistorius was speaking at a meeting in Brussels of Ukraine's allies. He announced extra military support for Ukraine from Germany. Jonathan Beale has more details from Brussels.
Europe's defence ministers still see no sign of an end to the war, despite US efforts to broker a ceasefire. That's why they're now taking over the lead from America in providing weapons to Ukraine. Germany's Boris Pistorius, who co-chaired the meeting with the UK, said Russia was still not interested in peace. New pledges of military support included drones and air defences. The UK's Defence Secretary John Healey said it amounted to more than £18 billion worth of weaponry and would send a strong signal to Russia.
China has further raised tariffs on US goods to 125%, deepening the trade war between the world's biggest economies. The new rate will come into effect on Saturday. It's the latest retaliation against a series of tariff increases by President Trump on Chinese goods, which are now subject to a duty of 145%. From Beijing, here's Stephen McDonnell.
At this point, analysts are saying that these increases from the superpowers, they're becoming almost meaningless because they're already so high as to impede much of the trade flowing between the two countries. And if you look at these comments from Donald Trump to his supporters saying, no worries, we're going to whack China with these tariffs and they're going to cave in quickly. Well, I think this just shows that is absolutely not going to happen.
The dollar has fallen on global money markets as uncertainty over Donald Trump's trade policy continues to unsettle investors. The US currency slipped to its lowest level against the Swiss franc in a decade. The United Nations has warned that the cumulative impact of Israel's actions threaten the future viability of Palestinians as a group in the Gaza Strip. The organization's human rights office also said that dozens of recent Israeli strikes have killed only women and children. The Israeli military says it only targets Hamas fighters. Here's our Middle East regional editor, Mike Thompson.
The UN spokeswoman, Ravina Shamasani, said the high levels of death, destruction and displacement, along with the denial of access to basic necessities, threaten the viability of Palestinians in Gaza. She added that with some strikes hitting areas where evacuees were told to go, nowhere in the strip was safe. The UN report also found that 36 Israeli strikes since mid-last month killed only women and children.
Mike Thompson with that report. World news from the BBC.
WORT is excited to be in our 50th year. And to help celebrate, we are hosting the opening night of Madison's newest venue, the Atwood Music Hall. Join us on Friday, June 13th, for a great night honoring Clyde Stubblefield. The night features performances from Mama Dig Down's Brass Band, The Funky JBs, VO5, Rare Element, DJ Trevor Banks, and Kaboombox. Andy Moore from the Friday 8 o'clock Buzz will host the evening celebrating 50 years of WORT and the grand opening of Madison's newest venue at 1925 Winnebago Street. Proceeds from the evening benefit WORT. Tickets are $25 in advance and available now at theatwoodmusichall.com. Be sure to shine up your dancing shoes and grab your tickets before they're gone.
WORT
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Bluestem Jazz, presenting Gustavo Cortinas's Crisis Knows No Borders at the North Street Cabaret on Saturday, April 12th at 8 p.m. Composer and percussionist Gustavo Cortinas brings melodic and uplifting compositions rooted in social justice. He is joined by Mark Feldman, John Arabagon, and Dave Miller. More information and tickets are available at bluestemjazz.org.
It's a Friday 8 o'clock buzz for April 11. I didn't look up to see what number I was at the John Nolan bike path. Jim Wilson, did you see what number you were?
You know, I wasn't really paying attention to that myself either.
Then I'm going to say we were number one and number two. I saw your bike parked at I am declaring that. If you say it on the radio, then it has to be true. Jim Wilson was number one on the bike path this morning at John Nolan Drive. Andy Moore was number two. Folks, this is a special morning. This is the double down edition of the Friday Buzz. And, you know, only people on the radio say the rather than the. So this is the double down edition of the Friday Buzz. Good old double down Trump. You know, that's who I'm talking about. He did it all week. So we will, too. That means it's the Friday, the 16th o'clock buzz for April 22nd. We're going to double down, Trump style. That means forget about what I just said. Instead, please know that it's the Friday 32 o'clock buzz for April 44. Double down! Hey, speaking of doubling, here's two names for you. Joey Logano, that's one, and Ryan Blaney, that's the other one. Who are Joey Logano and Ryan Blaney, you ask, Andy? They happen to be the reigning NASCAR Cup driving champions. And why am I talking about them? Well, some of you already know them, surely, but maybe not for this reason. They were critical parts of President Trump's double down, triple downing, double dare you, okay, it's not happening tariff announcement this week. That was on Wednesday. And by critical parts, I mean, they were standing behind the president Wednesday when he explained why he was pressing pause again on mega MAGA Austin Powers tariffs on the world. Earlier in the morning, Trump announced the 90-day pause on tariffs in the dignified way he makes all world stopping Wall Street crashing announcements in an online post. But he chose to face the press on that particular news item, the one that brought Wall Street to his knees again, while entertaining NASCAR racers in the White House driveway. Folks, if this doesn't say at all about Trump's sleazy relationship with the gravity of the presidency, I don't know what does. But I do know what I want to do about it. And right here on the radio, I want to, with your kind permission, on behalf of all the listeners, on behalf of American citizens everywhere, I want to apologize to Joey Logano and Ryan Blaney. You got to imagine if you were NASCAR champion Joey Logano on Wednesday and you go home after a long day, a pretty exciting day, and your partner meets you at the door and says, "I saw you on TV today." "Oh, you did?" Joey asks, and you know, he's feeling kind of pumped up. "Yeah, but what was all that the president was saying about tariffs and ass-kissing? He didn't say anything about NASCAR or you or Ryan. Did he know you were standing there? Did he know there was a big yellow NASCAR car there? Folks, the president makes a tariff announcement in an online post that rattles the world, and then goes outside and meets NASCAR racers. So those two things happened in succession. It's just another day. Pull the world's fiscal tree out from its roots and then go yakking it up with Team Penske. Jim Wilson, I got nothing against car racing. You got anything against car racing?
Well, I'd have to qualify that with professional car racing, I do not have a problem with. The amateur car racing that happens up and down East Washington Avenue, I do have a bit of a problem with.
Says the king of the two-wheelers of Madison. For me, it's the president talking about ruining my retirement fund while surrounded by race car drivers that chaps my butt. You know, that's the difference for me, that's all. But we got to move on. Good news. Online producer Elliot LeBrun has been released from Waupun and is back in the front office this morning. Welcome back, Elliot. We missed you. That 10 years went fast, didn't it? We told you it would. And he's out of the slammer, folks. Friday Buzz music director Ankur Malhotra is on the decks. Good morning to you, Ankur. And we just heard from engineer without peer, amateur race car non-fan Jim Wilson. Also with us this morning, the author of a brand new book on the subject of Wisconsinites' biggest obsession. I'm going to leave that right there. Wisconsinites' biggest obsessions. And then it's National Poetry Month, at least until the president cancels it. And at half past the hour, we'll hear some poetry from one of my favorite Milwaukee poets, Mikey Cotto Apollo. And first up, and speaking of MAGA madness, on a very serious note, we'll learn about the Trump administration's elimination of funds for the Madison Literacy Network Citizenship Program. Not that other stuff's not serious, too. But it's the double down edition of the Friday Buzz. Let's get double downing.
Je laisse derrière moi tous ces souvenirs, tous ces problèmes, car on part tous un moment. Certains pour fuir une femme, d'autres des situations pour le moins bancales.
Thank you, Ankur. That's a perfect lead-in, as per usual. That was America by La Femme. It's the Friday 8 o'clock Buzz. I'm Andy Moore. Segment one. It's been a challenging month for the Madison Literacy Network and for the clients it serves. Earlier this month, the network was notified that the federal grant that fuels their citizenship program has been terminated. The specific federal grant, which has been around since 2009, as I understand it, is called Citizenship Instruction and Naturalization Application Services. That's a fancy long name for a very, very important funding. It's designed to support lawful permanent residents, also known as LPRs, to prepare for U.S. naturalization interviews. Participants in the program attend English and U.S. history classes, among many other things. The participating lawful permanent residents must have lived in the U.S. for at least 3 years. Robin Ryan is the executive director of the Literacy Network. Dolores Beister is the citizenship program manager. They join us now by phone, and good morning to you both.
Good morning, Andy. Thanks for having us on.
Yes, you're so welcome. Robin, did I get the info in that introduction correctly?
Yes, good. Exactly correct.
Thank you. What did you feel when you received notification that the citizenship program grant was terminated?
Well, we were dismayed. We are not naive. We knew that things would probably change under this federal administration, but the abrupt cut with a note in the middle of the grant, in the middle of our services saying, you're terminated today, stop work, that was not what we were expecting. We expected our federal government to treat people with a little more respect and dignity.
Yeah, it was just the turning off of a toggle.
Exactly.
Dolores, Madison 365 reports that the grant termination notice stated that, quote, the Department of Homeland Security has determined that the scope of work performed under this award no longer effectuates the program goals and the department's priorities, unquote. What is your current understanding of what Homeland Security's goals and priorities are?
I think that's a question that Robin probably is better to answer.
Go ahead, Robin.
Yeah, well, I mean, Andy, I think, so first of all, we know this language is from a federal rule change from the end of the last Trump administration, just to make it easier, I think, to turn grants on and off. And as we understand it, the Biden administration tried to change it and was not successful. You know, it's hard for us to understand exactly what the goals and priorities of the department are. So rather than trying to channel what this administration is thinking, I can read to you the quote that was provided to the Washington Post. And what they said is, the decision to cut the grant program came in response to a directive from Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem to, quote, restrict grant funding to sanctuary cities. And then she followed, I think the spokesman followed up, quote, taxpayer-funded programs that support or have the potential to support illegal immigration through funding legal activities or support for illegal aliens are out of step with the President and Secretary Noem's priorities, as well as common sense. Quote, the gravy train is over, end quote. So I think it's the rhetoric that we're hearing about anti-immigration and presumably just desire to find funding to support the tax cuts.
But the thing that's still backbreaking, staying with you for a moment, Robin, is, you know, their emphasis on illegal. And, of course, right there in the grant, it's lawful permanent residence, correct?
Right. And I think when you gave a preview at the introduction about what the grant supports, it is for people who are following the exact guidelines that have been in place for a very long time for how a lawful permanent resident, otherwise known as a green card holder, becomes a citizen.
They can't even participate in the program if these legal hoops haven't been leapt through.
Correct.
Yes.
We report the documentation numbers on our grants.
I don't want to obsess over the language of the notification, but, you know, we're having a difficult time. People are having a difficult time answering that question that I maybe unfairly ask you about what you believe the program goals and Homeland Security Department's priorities are. But they even mess with your head by using a word like effectuate. No longer effectuates. What do you think that means? I've never even heard of that word.
That doesn't really, you know, doesn't bother me. I we know what we do. We stay focused on our mission.
If you don't laugh, you'll cry. If you just joined us,
laughing.
Good. I'm talking with Dolores Bister. Dolores is the Citizen Program Manager at the Literacy Network. The voice from whom you just heard is Robin Ryan. Robin is the Network Executive Director. I will stay with you yet a little bit more, Robin. And now I'm backing the car way back into the garage, so forgive me, but what is, give our listeners a little bit of the history of the Literacy Network and your core mission.
Sure. So last year we had a wonderful year. We celebrated our 50th anniversary. We have been around providing free education programs and currently to over 1,500 adults in Dane County. We provide help with basic skills, reading, writing, math, digital literacy. We provide lots of instruction in English language to non-native speakers, and we provide assistance in preparing for the citizenship test. Our students come from typically over 80 countries, speak 60 different languages. Last year, we served 200 refugees, and last year, 50 students became citizens.
Oh, my. Did you say 60?
50.
Wow.
50. I think we were on track this year to hit that 60, but I mean, the need is there. The number of green card holders in the community is really quite vast, but this will certainly impact,
you know,
the numbers.
In these topics, it's so dehumanizing to do head counts, but that is an important head count because that means that 60 fewer legal participants will have an opportunity to legally gain naturalization, correct?
Correct.
Dolores, Beister, finally to you here, and by finally I don't mean the end of the interview, I mean finally getting to ask you something. Tell us how the Network Citizen Program works, a little bit of the more of the inner workings. I sort of glazed through the big ticket things, and about who participates.
Sure. So we serve typically roughly about 135 students annually. There are, as Robin said, last year 50 students became citizens and under our program, and we were on track to hit even a higher goal this year. And as Robin talked about, all of our students are lawful permanent residents, all of the citizenship students. So they are doing exactly what the government says they want, people to do the process legally. And so they all have their green cards. They come in, we offer classes because there are four parts to a very difficult citizenship interview that every student has to go through. They will answer a set of civics questions. They have to memorize 100 questions, and they will be asked 10 random questions. They must get 6 correct. They are asked to read a sentence in English, and they get 3 chances on that to get 1 right to pass. And same with writing. They will get 3 chances to write a sentence in English, and they must get 1 correct. And then probably the most difficult task is to answer all of the questions on the N-400, which is the form that they had to fill out to apply. It's very expensive. It's 20 pages long, this N-400. And what we're hearing from students recently is that they are asking every single question on the form to pass. And it's a long form. It's complex. They ask somewhat intrusive questions about, have you ever participated in prostitution? Have you ever taken part in a genocide? Have you ever tried to use children or traffic? It's just a very long and complex, difficult form to get through. And so we practice that a lot in class. I teach a citizenship class, and the students are obviously very nervous. And frankly, many American citizens could not answer some of the questions from the from the civics test. They are now requiring that students who graduate high school answer some civics questions that are on the test. And so it's a difficult process. We are very lucky. The funding that we had was giving our students a place to go for legal advice, mostly free. Often they
above and beyond the training and education.
Exactly, above and beyond, because like I said, this is a really difficult form to fill out, many nuanced questions in English. And so
I'm sorry to interrupt.
I can talk all day about it.
there's so much. This is going to seem a little self-serving, but we experienced and celebrated the naturalization process with a family member here on the Friday Buzz team. Our DJ, Ankur Malhotra, last year became a naturalized citizen. And watching that process, albeit not firsthand, but learning about it through Ankur, it took us all a little bit closer into some of what you're describing that I want you to talk about in a little bit more of a deeper way now. And that is, think about out loud the focus and the determination that you see in the participants in the citizen program that have come through it.
My students continually inspire me every day. Many of them have a job or two. They have children. They have families. They come to classes. I'm inspired by them, and that's what keeps me going. Despite the funding cuts or whatever else happens, my students are just the reason that I love to come to work every day. And they are just so dedicated, and they just, they want to make what we all want. We want to make a better situation for our family and give their children more opportunity than they had.
Robin, if you would, put this in a national perspective. What kind of change does the elimination of this grant represent pertaining to the pursuit of citizenship across the country?
Well, I mean, I'll start with local. If we look at our local numbers, I think in Dane County, it's something like close to 8% of the population is foreign-born. And in Madison, it's even higher. It's probably, I think it's last I saw, close to 12%. Huh. So I just invite people to look around, see who's in our community, support our community. I don't, you know, I can't speak as much to how that plays out on a national level.
Yeah.
But I would say that this grant, you know, if you have lots of money and you're coming in, you're wealthy, coming in from another country, you can go get tutors. You can go get all sorts of other services. Maybe you had a lot of language acquisition when you were in your home country. The people who are coming to Literacy Network don't have a lot of funding. They are, as Dolores said, they're almost all working. They're working. Yeah. They have multiple jobs. They may not have had this a lot of education in their home country. Many have. Many have not. We just get a broad spectrum in our citizenship program. So this really just cuts off people who are, let's put it bluntly, working in those these lower wage jobs in our communities. So I think it's really short-sighted. The people themselves, we know that impact, right? It's sort of inhumane just to cut people off on an individual level. As a community level, it's short-sighted because a lot of people who are immigrating to the country who don't have a lot of funding are working in low-wage jobs. So I don't know how people think the economy is just going to keep on ticking along when you cut off the support for immigrants.
Well, you took a pass on the national context, but you gave the national context in your local context. I mean, when we talk about, you know, Madison population, you know, at best is a mid-sized United States city. If there are 60 participants in just this city, as many as 60, who will no longer be able to avail themselves of this program because the grant is gone. It boggles the mind to think of how many times that 60 across the U.S. there might be of people denied this opportunity.
Yeah, and I can give you another number. In the Madison metropolitan area, there are about 15,000 green card holders. Now, they're not all ready to naturalize at this point. You have to be in the country for a certain number of years. But that's a lot of people.
Dolores and Robin, either or, in just the 30 seconds or so that we have left, what can people do?
I hate to go back to the old ask for funding, but it's not just funding to replace the grant. The agencies like ours, I've been talking to fellow nonprofits in Madison, we're the ones who are getting cut, but also then we're the ones who are in a position to object to these cuts. So it takes time. It takes, you know, perhaps legal resources. So we're willing to fight. We want to fight for our citizens. But just, you know, I would say to people, support your local nonprofits. We are working directly with people who are impacted.
Robin Ryan and Dolores Buster, thank you so much for joining us on the Friday Buzz, and thank you for your work.
Thank you, Andy.
Yes. Dolores Buster is the Citizenship Program Manager at the Literacy Network, and Robin Ryan is the network's Executive Director. All right. There's some business to do, radio station announcements and stuff. But first, some music, and after the business stuff, Unker's Picks for your weekend and beyond live music experience. This is WRT FM 89.9, originating from Bedford Street in Madison, Wisconsin. It's 8:28.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
Do you have an insatiable curiosity about the world? Do you find yourself provoking conversations with your friends and coworkers? Are you a strong listener? Then you should consider applying to become the next host of A Public Affair, WORT's daily hour-long call-in talk program. We're now accepting applications for this volunteer position. The next host will be the voice of Tuesday's show and join a stellar lineup of folks who engage listeners in conversations on social, cultural, and political issues of importance every day of the week. We're looking for someone who is curious and well-informed, comfortable speaking on air, someone who can think on their feet, and has at least 5 hours a week to prepare and host the show. And of course, we'll need you to be here every Tuesday from 12 to 1 p.m. Apply by May 2nd. To find out more information or apply, go to wortfm.org/talkhost.
Folks, it's Friday 8 o'clock. Buzz, you know, there's no better place to be than in front of your speaker for music throughout the weekend, listening to WRT. However, sooner or later, you're going to have to get off your butt to go see live music. I make that sound like it's an obligation. It is to support live music, but it's also a damn good time. And now for Encore's Pick. But first, here's Jim Wilson with the Encore's Picks disclaimer.
Encore's picks are not influenced by any outside entities. Encore consults with an advisory board of one, Encore Malhotra. The cost of admission to any recommended show is of no concern to Encore, nor the price of beer, nor the cleanliness of the venue restrooms. Encore has one goal and one goal only in the delivery of Encore's picks, for you to have a kick-ass musical experience. Encore's picks is a trademark of the multinational corporation DJ Spin Cycle. All copy and trade therein is solely possessed. Here's Encore Malhotra!
Good morning, Madison. Is it spring? Yeah, it feels like it's getting there. You know, just based on the number of shows that are happening, music coming through town. So stop stop edging in lieu of watching your wristwatch. Go get Pyroclastic. Well, those are all names of actually the band playing tonight. Bands playing tonight at Mickey's. Yeah, and of course it's Record Store Day tomorrow. Guess what? There's music playing all around town, so... You know, if you feel like standing in line for several hours to get that, you know, reissue of a record...
It'll be worth it.
Yep, now do it, you know. That picture disc of The Cure, you know, will cure all your ills. You know, stuff like that. But no, I'm just kidding. You know, every day is record day for Record Store Day for me. And, but that also means there's lots of music happening. So there's Pieta Brown at Kiki's House of Righteous Music. There's a bunch of my friends spinning tunes at Jiggy Jams, you know, so get your electronic grooves on, which also is Justin Cudmore, Moorhouse B2B with Paul Gordon at Gamma Ray Bar, April 12th. And then we have one of my personal favorites, the Crib Sitters. You know, they're going to be leaving their crib and they're going to babysit you adults out here, along with the Video Sex Priest. Okay, so Sex is in the Air, Harmony Grill and Bar. That's April 12th. And of course, I'm going to keep it waxy and hot on the Pan Africa radio show tomorrow afternoon here on Mighty WRT, Spin Cycle.
Thank you so much, Encore. That's a heck of a list. We'll be right back with segment two after some of the hand-picked selection from Encore Malhotra.
Yeah.
This is the Friday 8 o'clock Buzz. I'm Andy Moore, segment two. I've discovered a lot of things since I took over this radio hour a couple of years ago. Some of you may know that I come from a decades-long career in television news and culture programming. I'm boring you with that because radio is better, I've discovered, doing it, and it's more suited for certain things, better than TV is, much better. So one of those things, well, I discovered during these past 2 years that poetry on the radio was one of my very favorite things, period. And one of my favorite Wisconsin poets happens to be joining us now. In celebration of National Poetry Month, I asked Mikey Cody Apollo to join us this morning. Mikey is a sex-positive filmmaker and poet whose most recent work, The Opposite of a Suicide Note, combines visual art with prose. They join us now from Milwaukee. Good morning, Mikey, and welcome back to the Friday Buzz.
Good morning. Thank you for having me back.
You're so welcome. And listen, congratulations, if I read this correctly, for being nominated for the Milwaukee Community Artists Award.
Yes, you did. Thank you so much. I'm really excited to even just be nominated through the Creative House here.
Can you tell us what that award is all about?
Yeah, so Creative House is a new organization here launched by artist Symphony Swan Zawadi. Essentially, she is turning over her childhood home after her parents passed away and creating it as a art studio space, a thinker space, a co-working space. And last year, she awarded two local artists here, Cree Miles and Liv. And so this year, they added a third category for community nominations. And so I, along with 13 other really dope people here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, got nominated.
When will that recipient be announced?
I believe in a couple of weeks on socials, okay. But the actual award ceremony is in June.
Okay. Speaking of the poetry community in Milwaukee, how would you describe the poetry and spoken word scene in your city?
Ooh, I think Milwaukee's poetry scene has evolved so much over the years. I think our youth scene in particular is pretty poppin'. That's how I got my start, through Stillwaters Collective, run by Dasha Kelly Hamilton here. And as I've become an adult, it's been really cool seeing folks who I slammed with in high school either also grow up and become educators, professional poets, professional full-time artists in their own right. We actually have a couple of things happening, particularly in Bronzeville this month at Niche Book Bar, as well as Honeybee Sage and Wellness. Our poet laureate, Shelley Conley, is really kind of taking the charge on that. So it's fluctuating, it's growing, it's expanding.
Well, you chose the words to describe the scene as any poet would. I love that. Fluctuating, expanding, that's wonderful. You mentioned a very specific event. The only way to make poetry grow is to water it, and watering it means getting people in front of it. Do you have any other regular events to recommend to people that might want to come down from Madison or your neighbors or people anywhere around the state or nearby that are listening that might want to dial in a weekly or a monthly gig?
Yeah, love this question. So I will always recommend Lyrical Sanctuary Open Mic. Lyrical Sanctuary is the longest running open mic here in Milwaukee. It is hosted at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee in our Fireside Lounge. There is an amazing host. Her name is Britt Nicole. There's DJ Bazan on the Wheels of Steel. And then there is Amar Nisaroma, who actually will, using Sharpie and paper and a projector, will sketch and draw artists as they go up to the mic. He'll either capture them in that moment he'll draw something from whatever they're reciting.
Oh, God. That's really electric. Right in front of your eyes, art. You've been posting various items this month related to National Poetry Month almost daily. What are you up to there?
Yeah, so I am embarking in the 30 by 30 challenge. It is when poets try to write a new poem every day for 30 days in a row. And so I'm doing good so far. Got to post number 11 today, but the goal is, of course, to just, you know, be in community with one another, share each other's work, and just kind of, you know, get stuff on the page.
Mikey, have you composed number 11 yet?
I have not posted. I haven't written number 11 yet.
That's
either.
What I was asking. What a great commitment. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Mikey Apollo. They're a Milwaukee-based filmmaker and poet whose latest book of prose and art is called The Opposite of a Suicide Note. Mikey, what do you think a good poem can achieve that a good movie cannot, or are they just two different experiences?
Oh, that's such a good question. I don't know. I feel like a good poem and a good film actually have a lot in common. I think they transport the audience. I think they put you in the space. They make you feel things. They make you think things. They move you. I don't think there's really too much of a difference aside from like the visual quote unquote aspect of it.
Yeah.
But I think they both do a good job of transporting the audience.
Let me ask you an artist question. What do you think you're good at? What do you think is one of your strengths as someone who composes poetry? And what do you think you still need to work on?
I think a lot of my strengths come from public speaking, but a lot of that also is just because I was a kid who got talked too much on their report card. something that still needs growing, I really love a good free verse. And so part of, for me this month, I'm trying to experiment with different forms of poetry. So eventually I'm going to try to tackle a sonnet this month. Not looking forward to it, but, you know, that's how we grow, by trying new things, challenging ourselves.
I'm struggling. The pause you hear is a quote I read a long time ago about writing, and I think it applies to poetry, and now I'm going to butcher it by trying to retrieve it. But it was something like, and it goes to practice, sort of what you're saying, expanding different formats and so forth. Something about writing is like weightlifting. You have to lift heavier and heavier objects and nouns and prepositions. But I think I did a pretty good job wrecking that. We should get to real poetry. I asked you to treat us to two poems this morning. You think now's a good time to do that? I want to make sure we have time for them. Why don't we do that? Could you set up the first one and read it aloud to us?
Yes, I sure can. So both of these pieces are from Opposite of a Suicide Note. They're actually right next to each other in the book. And so this first one is titled, "I Want More Black People to Write About Flowers." Sure, there will always be more important things to write about. But how often are we allotted the simple joys of being alive? To know that we all come from dust is to know miracles. So many of us sprouted from places unimaginable. Dry land, toxic waste, concrete, and without even a drop of water pure enough. Sure, there will always be more important things to write about, but how many days do we spend weeping and why should we add more? I want to read more stories about grandmas and their tender hands on earth. I want to listen to more of us laugh about the ways we found joy in the chaos. I want to hear more about the ways you plucked the petals, begging for a love me instead of the usual love me not. We have decades, no, eons of metaphors about slave ships and bullets. I want to hear more about the growing. I want to hear more about the seeds. Tell me more about the sunlight and the grass. I am so tired of senses.
Oh, that's a lot. There's a lot in there. It was lovely. Thank you for showing that. Poetry can be so many things, including a call for one to rethink one's approach, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. I feel greedy asking you for two. I thought about that even before I asked you if you would read two. but so what? It's Poetry Month. We're going to be greedy about it. So as before we let you go, will you please read one more poem of yours?
Yes, this one is titled The Joy of Creation, and I just want to real quickly shout out Milwaukee Ballet. They invited me to partner with some of their dancers these last couple years for their Ballet Beat celebration, and so that is how this poem got created in partnership with Milwaukee Ballet. The Joy of Creation. It starts with a flicker followed by a spark, red and orange and yellow against a backdrop of black. A flame that doesn't go out, but dances against the echo, the echo, the echo. It is a merciless light, unashamed of all the places it reaches, confident in the way it shines, proud and ready. It is loud in its existence. The joy of creation does not burn out. Instead, it devours away at the mundane, at the everyday, at the unspoken norms and boxes we are taught to dwell in. These black and white pages, an unfitting universe,
These lines were meant to be broken and colored outside of suggestions, but not barriers. Suggestions, but not borders. The flames continue to dance and make a ruckus, an idea, a thought, an invention. It is something to marvel at. It is something to praise. It is something that desires to be another something. We are not taught how to say thank you enough. Thank you for the new world, for the pleasure, for the adventure. How many worlds did we invent today? How many universes have we fallen in and out of? How else do we continue to prove we are alive if not for the paintbrush or the ballet slipper or the pen? How else do we continue to prove we are enough if not for each other? Something we could show to the void and yell, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Mikey Apollo, where can people find more of your work or Opposite Side of a Suicide Note if they want a copy of their own?
Yes, so for the homies out in Madison, I believe there are still some copies at A Room of One's Own. You can find more of my work at my website, which is MikeyC, like cat, APOLLO.com. And I'm also Mikey C. Apollo on Insta as well.
Mikey Cody Apollo, it was such a pleasure having you back on the Friday Buzz. Thank you and have a great weekend.
Thank you, you as well.
Thank you. Mikey Apollo is a Milwaukee-based filmmaker and poet whose latest book of prose and art, which we've been talking about, it is called The Opposite of a Suicide Note. And I heard them say that that's available at Room of One's Own over on Atwood Avenue. Alrighty then, from poetry to, well, I'm not going to give it away. Coming up in segment three, we'll talk to the author of a new book about Wisconsin's greatest obsession. You're listening to the greatest community radio station in the world, streamed all over the world on WRTFM.org. If you're huddled around the giant radio cabinet in the living room with the family in front of the fireplace, you're tuned to WRTFM 89.9 in Madison, Wisconsin. It's 8:47. Ankur Malhotra has this music for you. Friday 8 o'clock Buzz, I'm Andy Moore. Segment 3. Now we talk with the author of a brand new book about Wisconsinites' number one accomplishment. No, I'm not talking about DUIs. I'm talking about bratwurst and cheese. Okay, beer is in the title too, but the book is about consuming good kinds of it, not what happens afterward. Beer, brats, and cheese is the name of Heather Kerrigan's new book. And I'll tell you, it's the freaking Google Map Bible of places to go in Wisconsin for superb helpings of all those things. I thought I knew all the spots. I really did. Been here a pretty long time before I read her book. Now I feel like I just moved here. Heather Kerrigan joins us on the phone right now. And good morning, Heather.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. I know last week you were in Japan. Where are you this morning?
I am actually still in Japan.
Wow. Food is sort of an internet. What time is it in Japan? What day is it?
It's Friday night, 10:49.
Well, thank you for staying up late with us on the Friday 8 a.m. Buzz. I appreciate that.
Of course.
My God. Thinking about the planet here, food is an international language, I guess you could say. When you do international travel, like whether you're in Japan or elsewhere, and you say you're originally from Wisconsin, do people ever acknowledge cheese and beer and brats with you?
Most times people just have absolutely no idea what place I am talking about.
Oh.
So that's the first hurdle that we have to get across.
I guess. Yeah, I kind of got ahead of us, didn't I?
sure.
Well, we
but
wear
then our... usually after that, it's straight to cheese because they think milk and then they go to cheese.
Gotcha. We wear our cheese and brats and beer on our sleeves here, but we're also known for our schizophrenic politics. If I'm sure you've been following Wisconsin news. Elon Musk was in Green Bay 2 weeks ago rallying for a conservative Supreme Court judge, and I was at the protest, the hands-off protest last weekend on State Street. My favorite protest sign had a picture of Elon Musk in a cheesehead hat. Stay with me here. And the caption was very clever. You know what it said? It said, "Our culture is not your costume." Talk about the relationship and the ownership that culture has with food in the Badger State.
Oh, gosh. I mean, you know, especially the three things that I talk about in my book, they're just, I mean, it's kind of what built the state, almost, I guess you could say, you know, when, especially as immigrants started coming in, even if we go back to, like, looking at the first people who lived in Wisconsin, you know, they were consuming what was a form of sausage. And over time, we've kind of taken that and it's become, you know, our staple bratwurst.
Well, the first, and, you know, the first Europeans.
Exactly. Brought broths with them. We have that, you know, because Wisconsin has so much amazing land for grazing dairy cattle. We have a great production of milk. So we have amazing production of cheese because we have wonderful fresh water. You know, the beer makers have easy access to the water that they need for that. They have wonderful fertile farmland for growing barley, for growing hops, you know, just it's,
yeah.
Everything in Wisconsin is kind of tied into it. It's kind of what we're built on.
You know, you speaking of that width and depth, you covered 2,600 miles over 4 weeks, if I got it right, in researching your book. I want to get what you found in the food in a moment that you discovered. But first, what did you find in the people that you discovered?
They're amazing. They are so passionate about what they do. I mean, every time that I have a chance to talk to a brewer or to talk to one of the cheesemakers or to talk to a butcher. I mean, you can tell that they pour their heart and soul into it and you can taste it because they're excited about their craft and they're excited to keep learning about it. And it's so fun to watch them be able to share their flavors and kind of what they've come up with. And I mean, you can just even taste every little thing that goes into it.
Well, and you know, and the work ethic, service industry people, you know, people in bars and breweries, they work, you know, more hours than most of us would care to, that's for sure. But they also do something else than many of us in different occupations. They have that hands-on relationship to their occupations, don't they?
Yes, they really do. They really do. And I think that's one of the things that I found too is, you know, they're so welcoming. I mean, I guess I knew this kind of growing up in Wisconsin that everybody wants you to have the best experience. And they really want to know too about the foods that they're serving and the drinks that they're serving. And they can, I mean, they have a depth of knowledge, even just being the people who work there and who are serving you every day.
If you're just dropping in, welcome. We're talking with Heather Kerrigan. Heather's new book is a colorful and insanely detailed account of where to go in the Badger State for the best beer, cheese, and brats. Heather, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Twin Lakes, Wisconsin, so way down in the southeastern corner of the state.
What county is that?
It's in Kenosha County.
Okay. We're talking about places. We could do that all day, but we have to give the listeners a sampling of your discoveries. I think the craft brewers would call that a flight, I think. right? Let's start with beer. Reveal one craft brewery out of the mainstream site that delighted you in Wisconsin in the course of gathering information for this great book.
Sure. So, I mean, one of the things that I've really tried to do as I was even just gathering any of the places that I went to is I wanted to find something that was kind of unique and especially places that were really like kind of buying into that local sort of thing, like whether they're using local ingredients in their beers or kind of infusing it with some local flavors. And one place that I actually really like up in Green Bay is Noble Roots Brewing Company.
Say it again.
And Noble Roots Brewing Company. And they make this blueberry cream ale. And, you know, in some parts of the state, blueberries just really thrive and they're just such a wonderful little burst of flavor. And the way that they put it into their beer is just phenomenal.
Huh. What about a brat place that you can recommend? Either a place that makes them or serves them or both?
Sure. So again, kind of sticking with this, I love places that like really draw on that whole Wisconsin experience. I love Hometown Sausage Kitchen in East Troy. They have this packer brat and it's stuffed with cheddar and it's bacon and spinach. It's amazing. And if you can't get there to pick up something fresh, they do serve it at both East Troy Brewing Company, usually has it on the menu, and so does the Runaway in Burlington.
How cool. And that's not uncommon these days in Wisconsin, is there? So, you know, you can go and get a craft beer and then maybe get a local sausage as well.
Absolutely. And that's what's so nice about it. And I really tried to pull those places in the book so that, you know, if you only have a couple of hours, why not stop at this one place where you can try some cheese, try a brat, and have a beer?
Name another great brat operation that's in the book.
Oh, goodness. I really love Wisconsin River Meats in Mauston. They have just a ton of flavors from their just traditional brats. They have a wonderful jalapeno brat. They've brought patties, which I'm also a very big fan of because it's really nice. You know, especially if you're barbecuing, you can have a burger and have a brat patty.
I'm getting hungry. Hey, let's get to cheese, though, real quick. But before we do a place, what do you think makes a good cheese curd, Heather?
Ooh. Well, first off, I mean, it has to squeak. So it has to be fresh off the line. That's really important to me. So I would say that probably Ellsworth Cooperative is one of my go-to stops for their cheese curds because they're always fresh. I've never had them disappoint, and it's another thing that comes in a lot of flavors.
Where is that?
It's actually in Ellsworth, Wisconsin.
Oh, I figured so. I just didn't want to take that for granted. And what county is that in? Forgive my geography deficit.
Oh, no, you're fine. Actually, now that you're saying it, the county is kind of not coming to me.
Well, central Wisconsin, northern...
Oh, I'm sorry. It's in Pierce County. Okay. We're looking out way in the western part of the state.
Yeah, you know, cheese curds have almost surpassed beer in terms of our national presentation, haven't they?
You know what? I would say that they probably have in a lot of ways, especially because now you can get Wisconsin cheese in pretty much every state in any major grocery store that you wander into.
Yeah. Yeah. Finally, if someone held a loved one of yours hostage, and I'm sorry to put it that way, and they said the only way that they would free them was if you told them what the best dive bar in Wisconsin is, what would you tell them?
I would probably have to go with Big Daddy's in Rhinelander.
I love the name. What makes Big Daddy's tick?
You know, the people there are wonderful. They have amazing bartenders that'll just really keep you entertained. But they have a brat burger, and then they also have this Wisconsin egg roll, which is just like a deep-fried brat cheese little creation.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Wow. Oh, my God. Big Daddy's. I'm writing that down, but I've got the book, and it's wonderful. Heather Kerrigan, thank you for joining us on the Friday Buzz, and have a great weekend in Japan.
Thanks so much.
All right, you're welcome. Heather Kerrigan's new book is called Beer, Brats, and Cheese. She joined us on the phone from Japan. It's that book is a University of Wisconsin Press publication. Boy, that hour went fast. That always feels good when it does. I had a good time. I hope you did too. We'll bring some music up, and we'll bring this vehicle to the curb with the help of Engineer Without Peer. Thank you, as always, Jim Wilson. Elliot LeBrun, thank you. Welcome back, my friend. We're so glad that you're out of prison. Ankur Malhotra can be heard tomorrow at 2 o'clock. DJ in Pan Africa is a great show. It's, as I said earlier, you can be no better place for music starting next with Chris Powers and Mud Acres. The music in the next 3 days is yours for the taking. Wort has beautiful weekend music programming. Who? Wort. WRT in Madison, Wisconsin, 89.9 WRTFM.org. I hope you have a great damn weekend. Aloha. Kamaaina.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, April 11th.
This is Bird Note. This rollicking song belongs to a black-headed grosbeak. Like most birds, the male grosbeak begins singing in earnest a few days after reaching his traditional nesting grounds in spring. And like most birds, he sings frequently when trying to attract a mate. He'll sing a bit less while he and his mate incubate eggs, but pick up the pace again after the young hatch. By late summer, his singing will cease. Ever wonder how much a bird sings in one day? Some patient observers have shown that a typical songbird belts out its song between 1,000 and 2,500 times per day. Even though most bird songs last only a few seconds, that's a lot of warbling. On nights with a full moon, male sage thrashers have been known to proclaim their long-winded songs all night. But the North American record holder may well be the red-eyed vireo. One such vireo delivered its short song over 22,000 times in 10 hours. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.